Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 11th, 2005. This session, Absolutes Are Idolatry by Paul Olson, in the Creekside Room. This is disc number OLP 2005-01. Let's listen in.
And that's what this poem is about, imagining the question. And I think, as a probably by now a long-time biased literature teacher, I think that's what literature is all about, is to help us imagine the questions and to take us beyond those things that we just normally see and see and do without really being conscious of them. Literature is going to take us into a realm of consciousness where perhaps we haven't been before. I think we always think that poems are about something. They're philosophical or they're about a subject, and they are, but they're also just an experience. So I hope that by the end of the day, we're going to know something about what Robert Frost says about imagining questions, but we're also just going to experience this journey with the speaker and the poet in this whole new world of a different kind of vision. It's all very abstract, and I understand that. We will make it concrete in a couple different ways before we go. I wrote down some things just quickly, just before you guys came in, some questions that I think literature in general has asked and has forced other people to ask. There's a mythological story about John Brown, the great white slave, anti-slave actor, the martyr, you know, who was killed at Harper's Ferry, who said, slavery is evil, kill it. And in this mythological debate, the committees, or the representatives of the country who were making the laws said, we're going to form a committee. And John Brown said, slavery is evil, kill it. We must study the problem. Slavery is evil, kill it. We'll divide it south and slavery is evil, kill it. And he kept Adam, not with a question, but an answer really to, don't tweak something, ask the fundamental question, why slavery at all? But they were trying to tweak it. Well, the world tweaked it. You might be interested in knowing this. I have in my office a book this thick, this 8x11 or whatever these sheets are, with 10,000 rules. It's called the Tennessee Code of Slavery. And that's how 10,000 rules, and every state that had slaves had these codes. So that's how they divide. What are we going to do? Well, you can't have two slaves together at the same time. I'm just rattling off some of the thousands that are there. Every third week, we're going to go into their slave quarters and see if they've got any weapons. Every fourth week, we're going to go in and see if they've got any food that they've stolen. Why should we marry them? If we do marry them, how are we going to do it? All kinds of rules, 10,000 of them, just in Tennessee. Add Louisiana, Mississippi, you know, keep going to slave states, and we have it. I mention that to suggest that the people that put these books together never imagined, like that woman said about her kid, we couldn't imagine the question, why slavery? We'll just tweak and we won't imagine it. We'll just tweak and we won't deal with it, the most fundamental question. There's a wonderful poem, lots of you have probably heard it. I know some of you haven't had it because I read it to you. Wendell Berry has a wonderful poem called To a Siberian Woodsman. And it's about he's been looking through a book of pictures of some people during the Cold War with the Soviet Union, of some Russian peasants. And then he looks at these pictures and he comes up with a question, how can anyone consider your life negligible now that I've seen pictures of your face? He asked the fundamental question about why a Cold War, all the questions that the governments have answered, and he goes on to ask questions like, are the trees bound to some kind of nationality? Is the river some kind of nationality? Is it inherent in our creation that we should hate the Russians or the Soviet Union and the Soviet Union should hate us? Well, once again, I'm just trying to illustrate for you that I think what poets and literature people are about is asking these fundamental questions. For the fun of it, I think Jesus is this way too. I think Jesus as poet, and it's a legitimate look at Jesus, I think, brings a whole lot of radical questions to anybody that reads the things that he said. I'd like to list, you throw them out for me, the things that where Jesus asks some really fundamental questions about life. And not just tweaking the system, but where he really gets radical.
Who is your family?
Wow. It's a whole, isn't it? It's a whole new vision of family. You know, and the McCoys, and who are they always fighting in the South? Yeah, okay. Well, they got a different idea about family, and Jesus is saying, uh-uh. And specifically, he asks, I think, what does he say about family and about himself, about mothers? It's really a hard concept. Love who? More than mother? Me? That's, you know, this, now, for us 2000, it's pretty abstract. Brother, who's your brother? Okay, well, keep going. Family. What else is he? Just really got a radical vision of this.
Neighbor. Who's your neighbor?
Yeah, good. Teach freshman English long enough and you'll never know how to spell.
The rich are poor and the poor are rich.
Yeah. Nicely said. I'm just going to write wealth. And it's a whole new idea about that. Good.
Love your enemy.
What is Caesar's?
Caesar A.E.? That reminds me, when I was a kid,
C-A-E,
isn't it? Yeah, I was just C-A-E?
A-R.
A-R, okay, thank you. Remember this word? Receive, I before E. The teacher couldn't remember the rule. I'd go like that and put the dot in the middle, let the teacher figure it out. Oh, good, you got 100-year spelling test. No, that was pure luck. That's what I did here, Caesar, okay. Yeah, what's Caesar? Well, keep going. Wow, this, I hope we're thinking about, because Frost is going to make us think, this is really radical stuff. Don't judge. Wow. Okay, keep going. My favorite is this one. Sell all you have. Every time I read it, I say, my boat? I'm not selling my boat, Jesus. I'm sorry. Keep going, though. Huh?
The whole row of children.
what they are in our. We can dismiss them and shove them off to the daycare center, and Jesus says, you've got a lot of stuff to say about kids. Good, keep going.
In terms of radical questions, the fact that dying asks why we've forsaken is pretty radical. I mean, no, seriously.
Yeah. He asked that question, well, now maybe he's just quoting the 22nd Psalm, huh? This God who is so, God is in this guy, asked this question now. Yeah, it's radical stuff, yeah. You know, J.D. Salinger, the writer of what's the one we all read? Catcher in the Rye. In Franny and Zooey, he asks, who but Jesus knew that we're carrying the kingdom of God around inside us? We're all too goddamn stupid, sentimental, and unimaginative to look. And then God wonders, or Jesus wonders, why do you say anything else? Well, enough. We know that there's some real radical looks here, and just for a second, try to imagine, just pick one, and right here in this group, but just pick one of these and list the hardest one, maybe. I don't know. Judge not. How possible is it for us to live that way? And give examples of one we don't. Good.
I think it's easier to start as a kid, and I don't think many of us ever did start as children with that concept, but I'm noticing with my kids that they've heard it from the beginning, and it seems like they're light years ahead of where I was.
It's the self-specific music, remember that? You've got to be taught, carefully taught. Yeah. Kids do, good. Good.
I think the biggest challenge for me with the judge not is not so much as not judging, but then not judging the people who do judge.
Yeah, it's the liberals, it's all conservative, you won't listen to the conservatives. Yeah, that's insightful, and that's good, for sure. Other ways, it's just really tough.
Well, at some point, it seems like we do have to judge the actions of others as being immoral, or whether they're a danger to our society. So when is judgment of others' actions justified, and when is it our own issue?
So that's a really insightful thing too, and it makes this a really complicated notion then, that we live with certain kinds of judgments all the time. Well, Frost is going to speak to that too, that what kind of consciousness do we bring to this judgment? There is judgment that has no consciousness. Oh my gosh, a motorcycle driver. We were talking about that the other night. We got all kinds of stereotypes, and we made judgments about those guys with the motorcycles. And we know it on and on it goes, and American history takes us through Native Americans, through blacks, judge not. We just look and we judge. We know all that stuff. I think one of the things that poets, and I'm including all writers with the word poet, do is they try to make us conscious of these, how we judge, how we don't or do love our enemies. Conscious of all of the things that we just kind of typically go through without thinking. Okay, move on from that to another little exercise. I'm borrowing from John's great session this morning. Thanks, man, you set me up. You set up Robert Frost. Try to imagine for a couple minutes something that you can't live without, that you think you can't live without. And I'll get you started. I wrote down, now I have a wife and she works, and we work in two different cities, in the Quad Cities. We work 20 miles apart. One of our neighbors, we both work. I don't think we can get along without two cars. Now, that kind of thing is what I'm getting at. What? Just imagine, I can't get along without something.
Electricity.
Okay.
Each other.
That's what I was
going to
say.
I didn't want it to get so complicated.
Coffee.
What?
Coffee.
Coffee. That's kind of what I was thinking, Bob, about, not just each other stuff.
A cell phone.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Daily Show.
Oh, much better. What?
Shower.
I thought you said the Daily Show. I'd be right up there.
That's right.
Up
there.
How about good, healthy air?
We can't live without it. That's in a different category.
Newspaper.
Oh. Newspaper. You can see I've got different categories. Let's stay on this side of the stuff that we have, that we have to have, or the routines we have to do, like a daily shower. I got to have that. Well, you know, really, you don't. But keep going to this. Let's see if I wrote anything down.
Chocolate?
That isn't even going aboard. That is absolutely...
We can't...
Yeah, that's I would prefer we weren't even bring it up as a question. Yeah. Okay. What did
music.
I put? Go ahead.
Music.
Oh, that's good.
Put that in the middle, huh? Where is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about physical survival. Chocolate is one of those. But, and like healthy air, that's a physical survival. You have to have that. But you can get the point. But let's keep going to some of these things that. What would it be like to?
So you're thinking not more non-necessities.
well, there was stuff that we think is necessary. I mean, I really don't know how my wife and I would get along with one car. Yeah. But I'll bet if we asked or imagined the question, that's my point. We could figure it out. I mean, there's a route we could take. I've got colleagues that live where I do, and can we share cars? I was telling in a conversation with somebody last night, there are three families in the block that go to the same church, all go to the same church. One of the partners in that family is a doctor, so he always drives because he's on call, and his wife then drives a separate car, so in case he's called out of church. another one, the woman sings in the choir, the guy doesn't. They take two cars because she has to rehearse. And really, I could pick up all of them, right? And we sometimes go in two cars because my wife is a hospital chaplain. She's on call, has to leave, and then I'm there hitchhiking home. But I can't imagine hitchhiking home. Now we're getting the point, aren't we? Of course I could hitchhike home. Probably even there's somebody in the congregation that would give me a ride. Well, They'd give you a ride. But keep going with this. Imagine things you can't live without. I wrote some down just before this. two cars, three garages. A lot of this stuff is an affluenza.
A riding lawnmower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any kind of
lawnmower. I covet my lawnmower.
Air conditioning. Okay, you get the point. Now, just for a second, at what expense do we have to have this stuff? At what expense is it that those three couples that belong to the same church have, you know, six cars among us? At what expense do we have to have electricity? And we watch here at Holden, you know, where it's done a little differently. You can put flush, right, over here. I can't imagine not flushing the toilet. Coffee is, that's probably right over there with chocolate for some of you. Cell phone. Michael, what do you think is the biggest, Michael's on the board, the biggest issue that comes up the most often, year after year after year after year, and the board for Holden Village?
Technology and communication.
Sure. Cell phones and the whole idea of communications and email, and can we live without it, and you get the point of what kind of an argument it is. And here you are up here. I talked to a guy before I came here who said, I can't come to Holden because I can't be away from communication that long. Yeah.
And I think that should be turned around, like the grandparents asking about whether, I think you should say, at what expense would we add cell phones and that kind of access?
Well, believe me, we do ask that question
for
25 years.
Yeah, because
yep.
It would totally change this place.
It would totally change this place. Okay, well, you're in on the debate now. You're a Holdenite. Everybody in here is okay.
gatekeep it.
The what?
Gatekeep it. Keep it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough gatekeep. That's a tough gate to keep.
Well, I think the policy now is we have somebody at the bus that raids your purse and you see. Cell phone. We throw, there's a little pile of them. Have you seen that?
We have little meters that we can go up and down.
Up and down. Yep. We'll stop them. Well. To take us further into this little poem, part of what hooks us, I think, is our language. And the language we use and we get so accustomed to that we don't question what that tells us either. So move out of this for a second into, I'll just tell you an anecdote that I picked up a long, long time ago, talking to a Palestinian in Israel who had a master's degree in economics from the United States, from the University of Indiana. So in other words, he could speak good English. He gave a word for the Palestinian people who were fighting in the whole thing. This was back in 75, so you know, 67, lots of different wars there. And his word for these people was resistors. I don't want to get political, that's not my point. My point is to talk about language. And another group might call those people terrorists. That's not how you spell that, is it? When you get those words, whose side are you on? And who was, what do we call these guys who were in the Boston Tea Party?
Patriots.
Terrorists?
Patriots.
Look at the word, yeah, patriots, freedom fighters. Now look at our war in Iraq right now and the kind of language that's being used. Throw it out. What is it?
Insurgents.
Why are we in there? They're insurgents? Mm-hmm. And whose side are we on with insurgents? Occupiers?
Mm-hmm.
Infidels? Democracy? Liberty? All right, I'm not going to get into the political. We can do that with the village philosopher. But just look at the power of language to shape our perceptions on everything we do. And that language then sometimes we use these words without giving it a thought. Well, we got to get rid of the terrorists. We got to get rid of, and on it goes. Robert Frost's poem has a character who lives by this little slogan, good fences make good neighbors. Now, before we look at the poem, what does that mean? Good fences make good neighbors. What does it mean to you? You've heard the phrase. I'm going to leave the subject. You know, what is a terrorist? You know, there are people who say that George Bush is a terrorist. Well, then the people, when you say that, walk out of the room. We're not going to get into that one. What does it mean to be...
You want to, don't you?
Boy, do I ever! If you're not on my side, F. Good.
In the most literal sense, our neighbor used it in terms of, he quoted that phrase and then said, let's build a fence that looks good on both sides. That's a very literal use of that.
Your neighbor did that?
Yeah.
That's pretty nice because the bad side of the fence is always out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right?
You know, and he shared his fence and he wanted it to look good on both sides.
Yeah.
And he also meant that neighbors that get along and work things out, that's the other part.
Have good fences.
Have a good building, relationship.
Okay, keep going. That's good.
I think it means more that you need to keep your distance a little bit, that you need to have your own space. And that by having a fence up, you know that it's okay to look over the fence and say hi or invite them in, but it's also a border or a barrier that keeps them out.
Yeah, you just don't come over and grab a cup of milk out of there without asking.
Exactly.
Okay, good.
I guess you have to ask, really, what is a good fence? One of the things that we recognize in California, all you people with the Midwest and the East Coast, you don't have anything between your property. You may have a little bush. That's the mark you're
I don't have any bushes in
my all.
As a political
when everybody moved out to California, one of the first things they did in those developments was build 6-foot high fences so they couldn't say anything. How do you find your border? Your emotional space.
So there's good stuff about this. We're providing emotional space. We're providing our own personal.
I always thought that was supposed to be sarcastic.
That's why I teach the course, to ask people to find out what it means. I have never figured it out. You're here to tell me.
I thought it was supposed to be sarcasm, sarcastically said, and that there wasn't good fences didn't make good neighbors.
That could be. Well, and then if that's what you think about fences, I'm not interested so much. We'll get to the poll, and we'll see how that works and what Frost is doing with it. But what do we think now? And so you might have it in the poll. Good. That's insightful. That he's just being sarcastic. But how about us, fences?
Well, I think I should never have them, but I always build. I mean, in my house.
You do?
Yeah. I when I hear that phrase, I say, well, you know.
Well, metaphorically, you build fences.
No, really. Well, metaphorically, if you were at my house, I started out with no fences, but everything got broken, and people trying to put fences up. You have a great, it's a great life. It's all good.
The riffraff is out.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, mine is I have small children and a dog, so it keeps them in. Away from the neighbors, and where I can monitor
them.
Mm-hmm. So it's a safety issue.
Yeah, like Frost says, I keep the cows out from eating your grass. So they're good. Okay, good.
Well, I think that there's a sense that life together requires some kind of boundary. And sort of the irony, I come from New England, and the stone walls, of course, are famous in New England. But in the woods, today, now New Hampshire is primarily forested. It was in the 19th century agricultural land, and so there's stone walls everywhere in the woods, and they don't keep anything in or out, and you wonder what in the world are they doing there.
Yeah, well,
obsolete.
Do people go out and repair them?
No, stone walls are craft and art.
Good.
It's all the boundary stuff, but it's, the fence around my property. Becomes a fence, my town is fenced from the next town, becomes my state has a boundary, becomes my country has a boundary, has a fence. We've got famous fences from the Berlin Wall to the fence on the Mexican border. So we end up, and then the revolutionary concept is when you have something that can fly past your boundary and change and make it invincible.
That's very good. Yeah.
And the National Allied Steel of Fence is as an easy sign of is my neighbor aggressive toward me? Are they coming across?
Yeah. Or I am of this clan or this culture. You're the other.
Now, Paul, I know you don't want to be political at all, but you have to be aware of the wall or the separation fence or the apartheid barrier, however, so we don't even know what to call a fence between Palestine and Israel.
Yeah.
Is it a wall? Is it a fence? What is it?
Yeah.
Just a barrier.
Yeah. And there are walls at the Mason-Dixon line. And there are walls around every Indian reservation in America. There are, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But aren't all the things that we build for separation really artificial? An illustration I've often used was when God looks from his perspective where that is at the earth, we have a line on our maps, on our globes, that divides us from Canada. Another line divides us from Mexico. And all these lines on the globe that we have in our classrooms, all are astronauts don't see any lines. Those are all in the minds of human beings, created in the minds of human beings. We've created fences that don't exist.
So we've already elevated, by asking these questions, fence into a metaphorical stature, haven't we? I mean, we're building the fence, yeah, but you said you build fences in your house, and we all do. And we got a fence between Palestine and Israel. We got a fence between the blacks and the coloreds and the Asians and the whites in South Africa. And we've got, so fences become metaphorical. Here's my proposal. Let's look at this poem specifically. And then at the end, I'd like to read the whole thing straight through without stopping. And the reason for that is, first of all, we want to see the depth and complexity of what Frost is doing with your ideas. And then forget all that, or let it tumble in our brain and our hearts, and just hear the whole poem together as an experience of being out there doing what this poet is doing. So you have that poem in front of you. Anytime you want to stop, I'll stop too, but anytime you want to just talk about a line or an image. But now one of the things we're going to see is that the abstract notions that we bring to fences, Frost is going to concretize with an image. That's what poets do, is they take these abstractions and make them into something concrete that then we can expand, and so it expands and shrinks and back. We'll watch that. Okay. Doctor told me when I hit 40, I'd need glasses. Way before that. Just the very first line for a second. Something there is that doesn't love a wall. What are you after? Just thoughts. Good.
Just the natural sense of everything in nature wants to pull apart. There's this natural, I forget the name for that, sense of wanting to come apart. There's a word for it.
He can't figure it out either.
Entropy.
Whatever the word is that we want to call it, it's something. But now he's going to investigate for a while, what is it that doesn't want this wall? And here's proof of that. Something is it doesn't love a wall that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun. I'm going to draw that wall. I'm a wonderful artist, you should know. And here's this wall, and the rocks are all different shapes. And he's going to tell us later, some are nearly balls. But they're shaped weird. Okay, we've got enough of these. That the frozen groundswell spills some of these upper ones, right? Just literally. And that's the first way to read a poem, is literally what's going on. Don't find any symbolism. Don't find anything. Just say, what's there? Well, we got some of these rocks have tipped over. And makes gaps. They're big ones, too, aren't they? Even two can pass abreast. Well, I don't know what that is, but I know it comes down. Maybe it's this. The work of hunters is another thing. And he explains that. I've come after those hunters and made repair where they've left not one single stone just to get the frickin' rabbit out of hiding. That's a paraphrase of what's here. Frost never in any of his poems used the word frickin'. But they took it out. Why? To please the dog. You've seen it, right? The dog's got the rabbit cornered. Bark, bark, bark. Boy, that's not onomatopoetic, is it? Woof, woof, woof. To please the yelping dog. But there's something else. The gaps I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but they're just there. I don't know what causes this. It's not the hunters. It's this here. Something. And he's going to investigate further. Watch this. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill. Well, I'm going to back up. No one has seen them, heard, or made them, seen or heard them, or made them made. But at spring mending time, we find them there. A really important line, and you can talk about it now, or you can talk about it later. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill and watch this rhythm of this. And on a day we meet to walk the line and set, I'm exaggerating how you would read this. We on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again and keep the wall between us as we go. Any comments? I read it exaggerated rhythm. That'd be terrible. I won't read it that way over at the end.
Collaborates with the wall.
Collaborates?
What? We're on autopilot. We're just doing it.
Even the rhythm of that. Yep.
Keeping each other safe.
Yep.
Not asking the question.
And they're not asking the question. And there's more here too. Keep looking at. I'll just.
Read. They're all one syllable words except between, which is used twice.
Between. Yeah, that's good. And that's becomes important. Yeah, they meet on opposite sides.
It also echoes back to the first line because there's an awkwardness to the syntax instead of saying there is something that doesn't go on the wall. It's something there is that fits the rhythm better. Yeah. And there's a sense of this whole trying to fit these things to a certain thing where it doesn't want to go.
Ooh, that's good. That's why you want to go to her session at 5 o'clock. Okay? There's a poet. That's very good. Very good. I'm going to go back to another line, though. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill.
There was a wall, the hill.
What?
There was a wall there, the hill. But they have a different.
I hadn't thought of that. We got a natural one already, but and he's kind of far away beyond the hill. Who initiates the action? Remember that. This is the guy who's going to criticize his neighbor for living behind the sand, for not asking the question, for not being conscious of his own routines. Hey, you dummy, you're going to do this. They don't even need to do it. But he initiates it. It's critical, I think, as we go on through the poem. Okay. Well, we keep the wall between us as we go. How's that for good fences make good neighbors? But you do with it what you will. To each the boulders that have fallen to each. So as we're doing this, here's the wall, and you're on that side, and I'm not going to help you pick yours up, right? I'm just picking them up on my side. And get that. It's too heavy. I'm sorry. Leave it. But or go get your husband to help you. But to each, we're going to pick them up. And some are loaves, and some nearly balls. We have to use a spell to make them balance. Literally, what's going on there? Yep.
I don't know about that, but I wanted to comment. I think it's kind of ironic that they're building this wall to separate themselves, but they're working, I mean, even though you're saying not, they're still working as a team in this project.
Yeah, and for sure. I'm saying not, but look at it. He went to get this neighbor. It's maybe the only time they've even talked, and so good fences. You know, I haven't invited him over for coffee, but I will invite him to, it's not. Yeah, we're going to build this together. You're right.
Self-report.
Yep. It's not just simple bashing, neighbor bashing, or fence building bashing. That's good. But how about this? We use a spell to make them balance. Do you see that literally? We put the rock up here. It's not going to stay. Stay there. Abracadabra. But when I watch, next line. Stay where you are until our backs are turned, and I go away and... Am I going to go back and fix it? No. Did I break it?
Not.
Oh. Oh my gosh. Michael. Get the board.
You saved somebody from falling.
Give me 5. She said I saved somebody. He said I saved somebody from falling.
Yeah.
Chair.
Yeah.
It was going to break.
Dangerous.
Well done. Oh.
Has anybody ever been fired from Holden before? Teacher? I got a class tomorrow too. Don't come. I'm not going to be here. Okay, let's get going. So, stay where we are until our backs are turned, and then we wear our fingers rough with handling them. Is this a casual occurrence? This is hard work.
Hard work.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. Never mind. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on the side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine. and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. What do you do with that? There's language, and that's we're after that now. He tells him, hey, we don't need to do this. Your apples aren't going to eat my pine cones. Good fences make good neighbors. I erased them, the words up here. The words, the language, the question. They're terrorists. They're...
I think it implies just in case. Just in case. Good. We need the fence just in case.
Yeah.
You might get weird.
Yeah.
You might go off your medication. You don't know.
Something you can't live without.
Paul is already off his medication.
I didn't need him.
Whoa!
The guy in the poem.
Michael, you do not have permission to talk. He's too smart. Go ahead.
I think it's a way to arbitrarily, precisely define the division, just so it doesn't get blurred in the future. It's just a way to be able to say there's the division.
You hear his language? Arbitrarily, precisely. That's great. That's right. We're going to be definitive about this, even though we've kind of just grabbed it. And I don't know why I grabbed it, says the neighbor. Good fences make good neighbors. And what do we do? And go back, I hope we're tying all this together, even with this morning's the stuff about our consumerism, but about Jesus' radical thoughts, the things that we think we can't live without, the things that we do methodically, automatically, without any consciousness of what it really is doing and what it really means.
Sounds like local government. It was working, but let's legislate.
I hear you. I promised I wouldn't get political. That's
take
good.
Take care of it for you.
So now we'll watch the guy get a little bit self-righteous here. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. And before I built the wall, you guys, lots of you are old enough to remember that Robert Frost read this poem on the Berlin Wall. You think that was a powerful moment? The translator there in German. And then he comes to this line, before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Now, who's asking these questions? Those questions. What am I walling in? What am I walling out? Who's going to be offended? Before I moved into, we moved into the house we have, there's an 8-foot, well, I don't know what you call fence anyway, around our backyard. And I didn't put it up. But the neighbor said, well, how come that fence is there? I said, don't ask me. It's just there. But what he made me do was say, should I take it down?
Did you?
No. I hate that guy. There are no cows, so I'm going to ask that question, and that my neighbor doesn't have any cows either. To whom I was like to give offense. Well, we've got these good questions, but he comes back to this same thing he started out with. Something there is that doesn't love a wall. What is it? We still don't know, do you? That wants it down. I know. I could say elves. You know, it's not the hunters, it's not the frost, it's not the cows or the apples, it's elves. That's it. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly. And I'd rather he said it for himself. Now he's going to mock him. I think, hey, you tell me, this is a really condescending, where can I go? Good. It's not going to break. Crash. I see him there bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand. I mean, he's picking up like this. Picks him up, you know, and they're wearing their fingers rough. And not he isn't, apparently, but he already said that we wear our fingers rough. I see him there bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. You are. What?
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. That's a pretty.
It's the difference.
Kick in the teeth.
It's the fear from difference. Any difference, whether yeah. It's threatening or not. We stopped.
Yeah, good. He's an old stone savage And what's the phrase about light and dark? And if you're really smart, you see the light. He moves in darkness, it seems to me. He doesn't need it. Right? Says the end of the street. I need it. I'm asking the man, what about the cows? What about the apples? He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well. He says again, good fences make good neighbors. Talk. Be about anything. And then we'll read the whole thing through.
The sense I get from the phrases there is kind of like, as we've always done it this way. It's sort of veering into something a little radical, but it seems to sort of come back because, you know, it's how we always did it.
Yep. The fencing comes at the time of the year. The poet just said I've had enough poetry. No, she's going to prepare. Good. Wait, keep going to this.
There's more to it in the sense it's like, there's also, he's wanting to maintain their reverence. There's some reverence for people who come before him and made that decision, so he would like to maintain that. But there's a few things left that I remember of my family or my father that let me continue in this tradition without getting rid of that.
It's a neat word for that. That this tradition, they do revere this. But he wonders why. And I think the next section that I'm doing is we're going to look at Alice Walker's The Color Purple. And there's all kinds of traditions in that novel that are looked at and saying, why? Why do we do this? Why do we hold this reverent? And the same kind of questions that Jesus asks. You know, why is it this your brother, but this isn't? That's a great point. This is a revered tradition. And it's kind of without, you know, spring is the mending time, and I come and ask my neighbor. I just do it. Good.
But any revered tradition, you should be able to answer it. You should be able to justify it somehow. You know, you should be able to give some reason that, I mean, you know,
it's tradition.
Tradition. All together now. Good. Go ahead.
I get the sense that it's there as the means to maintain ownership. Basically, it's kind of blowing them off and saying, well, this is my land, I'm doing what I want, and this is the walls here, and it maintains my ownership of this, and you do what you want on your side.
Yeah, so this tradition, that's good. Keeps separation. Keeps an ownership.
Maintain that ownership.
Yeah, that's good.
There's a smell of fear throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, fear of. And who's afraid? That's nice.
Also, fear of conflict. Just a fear of conflict and a sense of like, the traditional way of.
Yeah. Wow. And whether we have conflict or not, we're just going to do, yeah, don't, it's good.
Is it a fear of someone invading our emotional space? We all come into a room and we have an emotional space with everybody else. Some people, you know, might not feel uncomfortable at all. If I came up to you and started talking like this, you know.
Remember what I did to my neighbor? Remember what I did to my neighbor?
You might walk in the door and I'm over in that corner and you've already invaded my emotional space.
Yeah.
Where's my emotional space? What does that have to do with the relationship?
Yeah, yeah. Good. Thank you. Good.
I think I'm going to take a different tact. I don't know that I agree with the thought that I'm thinking, but I'm really, you know, I picture this farmer as a large man able to grasp two fairly large stones.
Yeah.
One with each hand.
Yeah.
And thinking about that phrase that his father said, and sort of holding on to that phrase the way we hold on to a smooth stone and rub it. And then thinking about that stone wall that maybe was built 100 years before him, and maybe built by his grandfather, or even his great-grandfather. And that it's a kind of ancestral worship, in a way, of honoring those who were before, when perhaps that wall did have some function, separating the sheep from the towns. And so I don't know if I would be so hard on him, even though I enjoyed the spring thoughts of frost.
Well, and you're in Jeshua's camp too, that this is a revered thing, and that's good. And it makes me ask the question, who is this poem about? And you can ask the question, what is it about, of course. But there are several answers to that too. Who is this about? And you just talked about, we've all talked about this guy who moves like a stone savage, who picks up these rocks in his hands, wears them to the nub, stands behind the saying, good fences make good neighbors. We got another character in here too, who initiated the action. Go ahead.
It also speaks to me about communication between two people. You may have two totally different types of people, as maybe illustrated by that. You know, someone who's a deep thinker, a questioner, a seeker, and someone who isn't. Someone who takes things at face value. It's always been that way. It's my grandfather. And doesn't feel any need or compunction to explain that to the neighbor. None of your like business. And so you have it's an unsatisfactory meeting of two people. Mm-hmm. Maybe neither of them are getting their needs met. You know, that this poet would love to hear more about the wall if he really believed it. If it was great-grandpa's wall, wouldn't this guy love to know that?
Yeah.
I feel like
he doesn't, yeah.
There's no satisfaction for him.
Good. You guys are great. No test. A's.
Well, in some ways, when he initiates the conversation, he's doing unto others do unto others as you would have them do unto you. He knows that this fence is important to his neighbor. He thinks it's silly. He thinks there's no reason for this fence. But I know my neighbor thinks it's important. It's part of my neighbor's tradition. So I'll call and we'll go out and build that fence together, even though I think it's silly.
What an interesting take on that whole thing, isn't it? Yeah, that's good. And that's there.
I think he likes the fence. My sense is that it's a very affectionate, it's not just fear, there's affection for the fence. I mean, this guy kind of lovingly describes how fences crumble and what he's doing with his neighbor. And he's able to criticize his neighbor pretty well, but he did initiate the action. And he doesn't just come out and say, damn stupid wall, what a waste of time. He goes through each little
creating their own tradition.
They do it together. He doesn't call and say, your fence needs mending. Mm-hmm. They do this together. Whereas I think when your neighbor sees your 8-foot fence, if it has a hole in it, he's not going to say, we need to go mend our fence. And it's like, you got a hole in your fence. Do something about it. You know? So I see that at least, even though they're building this barrier, that they're doing it together.
Yeah. That's a good spin on that. And not spin, it's a good reading of this poem. Good.
And it isn't only together, though, because way back earlier, he comes upon this gap in the fence and he says, I have come after them the day you care. He has kept up the fence on his own. So
that's really important. That's great.
It isn't only that he's waiting for them to do it together.
I'm building. Good. Very good. Good.
Part of me is wondering whether the one wouldn't be asking all these questions. He wouldn't even bother asking all these questions if he didn't know the other neighbor was so resolute. He can trust the fact that he's always going to say, good neighbors make good friends. He can just trust that. So he's got this person who takes care of that end of the deal, and he's the questioner. So this is my role. I ask the question, and my neighbor says, good neighbors, good neighbors. And that's the role they play together. They're in this together, and that's how they do it. He would never want to ask these questions unless he knew that he could trust his neighbor to hold that line for him.
Always. That's good. Wow, you guys are good.
I was really going, I thought your comment was really good. I went back, looked at the poem, and third line at the bottom, it says, he'll not go behind his father's saying, which again seems to be going to the tradition part of this. His father's saying.
Good.
I still, what I get, especially from the first line, And then especially where they're balancing the rock, you know, basically casting spell it, and then their fingers are worn down and it's rough and it's hard work, that this wall is really, the only thing that wants it there are them or the people, and it's an unnatural act, and they have to expend lots of effort and lots of energy, almost supernatural energy, to keep and maintain this, and really what's the drive that's making this. There's some drive there, but this is really a natural thing.
An unnatural thing.
And it exists for them and really nothing else. And so I think he's trying to just basically grapple with
it. I'll buy that and then everything, but let's ask some questions, like they put it together and they don't care if it falls apart. Stay where you are until our backs are turned.
Right.
And then we'll move on. So is it about the wall?
Is that what he's saying in there? Or is he just trying to show the art in which it takes just to get this up? It's so unnatural, just this balancing act. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't know if the backs are turned, if he really doesn't care if it falls down after his back is turned. I don't know if that's...
Well, the line says, stay where you are until our backs are turned. And if it falls,
Because
you can do that with what you will. Yeah. Good.
Maybe it's two hearts, and the fence is fear, and that there's a need for it to fall down so that they can love and be loved.
Need to cross the fence to get to it.
And that they want it to, and a piece of them wants it to fall down so that they can
bring their hearts together. Mm-hmm. Well, what you're doing when you think like that, and that's wonderful, is that you've taken the poem and its literalness into metaphorical meanings that's where we all bring our own personal history, and some people call it baggage. I don't. I call it our personal history into how we understand this stuff. It's great. Michael?
I mean, there's also a paradox here if we pay attention to the title, Mending Wall or Mending Fences. That's usually a metaphor for reconciliation. Right. And yet here we're talking about defenses and boundary separation, whatever, and yet, I mean, if you and I have a disagreement, then maybe I have to go to Paul, then I have to kind of mend my fences.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, at the same time, there seems to, I mean, mending has a designation of reconciling, so
yeah.
There's some kind of reconciling also happening in this action.
Wow. I'm sure learning a lot about this poem. Go ahead, Robert.
I'm getting a sense of atonement from this poem. That the subject of the poem is the one who has initiated the action, but is able to look both at his neighbor and at himself and say, these are the values that we've had. Father's always done this. And I'm participating in the act, but is it a good act?
Yeah.
Is it something we should be doing?
Yeah.
Should we look at it again?
You know, you guys have all put on a much, and I like it, a much more positive spin on what this is about. And that's, frankly, more in keeping with who Robert Frost is as a poet, too, than what the way that I've kind of understood this is that, and that's what I'm trying to fit in. And it works, though, too, with our session this morning on consumerism. Here's this guy who has all of the consciousness of this stupidity of this act, and still he does it. In the same way that, you know, I have all this consciousness. I do not need two cars. I do not need a three-car garage. Watch Affluenza and see where we've moved from 1,100 square feet per house and the new ones to 2,400, whatever the numbers are, but we've, you know, doubled the size. We have to have it. Well, we don't have to have it. We know that. Guess what? We still build it. And so there's, the point is there, perhaps, is that your positive spin on this, spin is the wrong word. Your positive understanding of this fits what Robert Frost is about in all his poetry, that he's a poet about love. He's a poet about relationships. You know, the hired man, home is the place where when you come there, they have to take you in. I mean, he's about that relations in every, there's lots of them. But the ambiguity sits there with, as all poets do, I think, to help us raise our consciousness, and the thing we started out with at the beginning, to imagine the question. And then, you know, it's Tolstoy who says, how then do we live? I love that line. Yes.
All of a sudden, this is just really important to me. But
good.
It's like,
good.
This, like two countries or something, and they don't really have anything in common except this wall. And it's at the wall where they come together. It's at the wall where they have something in common, where it's at the, you know, all these generations, you know, they don't understand why the wall is there. They don't understand why, you know, good fences make good friends or what a neighbors or whatever. But they don't understand each other. They don't understand each other's cultures. Yeah. They don't understand. But they do understand this one commonality that brings them together all the time as neighbors and as friends and whatever.
Two religions worshiping the same God.
Exactly.
There is a price. You know, I know my neighbor right behind me, name's Tom Newell, the song out of the mailbox about 5 days ago. And he told me that his wife really took a really horrible turn for the worse. And I felt kind of guilty because there's my neighbor. He's just a couple, you know, 20 yards from me. And his family's going through this crisis. And I just find out.
Let me read the whole thing straight through. You can follow along too. But now this is what this is the experience of the poem. The analysis is gone. We've floated around with all kinds of great ideas. And then just let, you know, poetry is about something, but it is also just an experience. And I shouldn't say just an experience. I don't mean to minimize. Okay, so here's the straight through. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go. To each the boulders that have fallen, to each. And some are loaves, and some so nearly balls, we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, it's just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There, where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him. But it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me. He will not go behind his father's saying. And he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors. Have a good day.